I'm Lodging Editor Kate Hughes. Thank you for listening to Lodging on Demand. As the COVID-19 crisis continues, hoteliers are starting to have to make difficult decisions about their properties, including decisions regarding whether a bankruptcy makes sense. Steve Jakubowski, shareholder at Robbins, Salomon, and Pat Limited, joined me to discuss key issues facing parties in a distressed hotel situation and what hoteliers should keep in mind as they plan their financial futures. So I want to start with what some of the biggest financial issues facing hoteliers are as a result of this pandemic. What are your thoughts there?
Well, obviously in this environment, everything has been turned upside down from the perspective of an owner-operator of a hotel property. So revenues are all over the map. And depends on what class of service you are, depends whether you're a gateway to international travel, whether you're a fly to market. So there's so many different variables that go into the top line. And now you've got all these changes on the bottom line, which can be good in the sense that obviously you have more expense because you have to change your model and do different things that are adapt to the market's requirement for cleanliness and sanitation. But on the other side, the result of the shutdown has clearly been that hotel operators are radically changing the way that they approach their business. And as a result, they're finding in general that there are significant cost savings and that across the board, the level of operating expense is down relative to revenues. So that's clearly a main financial issue. But the bottom line is, because what is this all relevant to? The relevance is ultimately to value. And so the biggest challenge that hotel operators and banks and anybody involved in this industry has is the valuation issue. And at what point are you throwing good money after bad? And at what point is your lender prepared to take over the property?
How can you make that decision? When, as a hotelier, do you decide that that's the route you're going to take? Who do you talk to? How do you decide that?
So, critical question. And to me, that's really the first question that the hotel operator should have, which is, how do I figure out what makes sense in terms of the future? And should I be putting more money? Should I be going out raising more money? And at what rate? And et cetera. And again, it comes down to value. And so I think the most important thing, particularly in this environment, is finding yourself a really good expert, and maybe a couple of experts, one on a national and valuation basis, someone who has experience, whose firm has experience in valuing properties in both downturns, upturns, and sideways turns. And then I think you got to have somebody local, somebody who really understands what's happening on the local market. Is there a university there? Is there, like I said, a go-to market, a fly-to market, a gateway market? Is what's the status of the government regulation? So you're not going to... The difference that we're facing now is that there are so many more uncertainties associated with evaluation that you really need to have a team that is ultimately going to present, bottom line, the best evidence of value, and whether that's to persuade a bank or whether that's to persuade a court.
So what if the worst happens and a hotel goes bankrupt? What would lead to that situation? And if a hotelier is on the verge of that, what are their options?
Well, there are, from a hotel operator's perspective, they're going to, it really depends, again, on what the value is. So if it turns out that the secured lender, the loan to value was pretty low to start with, and so the secured lender, instead of maybe being 30% levered, with respect to the property loan to value, maybe it's now 60% or even 70%. There's not that much that can be done other than if the lender gets too aggressive, and we'll talk about what that means. But if the lender gets too aggressive and starts to try to foreclose on the property, you've got two issues. First, in a lot of markets, the mortgage foreclosure courts are basically closed. and either that's done because the courts have said we're not going to hear anymore, or because the executive orders have come out and said that everything, that the, that it's not going to happen for another 60 days. So in Illinois, the mortgage foreclosures have all been stayed until October. So so the banks have a problem in the sense that they can't move quickly to foreclose on the property. And so they're really stuck because there aren't buyers out there. There are very few transactions going on. But people aren't going into bankruptcy either, because what does it really solve unless you're willing to put some money on the table?
What are some of the other options then if a hotelier is in trouble and doesn't want to go that route? What are their options?
So it depends, again, how aggressive they want to be. So you could get very aggressive in a bankruptcy and you could say, all right, I'm as the hotel operator, I'm going to have a negative cash flow for the next couple of years, but I'm going to cover that, and I'm not going to agree with the projections that we're going to get back to normal in 4 or 5 years, because that happened in the last recession. And why would anyone think that this recession is going to happen on par with the last recession, given all the difficulties and uncertainties we're facing today? So I think that, when they're looking at valuation, they're going to say, well, we're really not going to get back to break even 2019 until maybe 2026. And so if that's the case and they feel that the projections are sustainable, then if they want to be aggressive and the lender's undersecured and the lender doesn't want to work with them, then they really could consider the bankruptcy option. Now, that has a lot of advantages, because bankruptcy is set up to cram down secured creditors in an adverse environment. I don't represent banks, I represent debtors. And I can tell you that bankruptcy courts are friendly, debtor-friendly courts. They're as debtor-friendly as you'll find. They're much more friendly than foreclosure courts, because in a foreclosure, the lender will always get a receiver appointed. Well, not always, but pretty commonly, and particularly in this environment. Now, it depends, and no matter what, they just don't want control in the hands of the operator. And so if it really gets to the point where the lender's frustrated and is ready to pull the plug, then it's going to go into court, then they're going to appoint a receiver. And so it's at that point that the operator has to ask himself whether he's just going to let the receiver take over and run its thing, or whether it's going to actually be proactive and challenge the bank's aggressiveness and improper valuation. Because ultimately, if the bank and the debtor agree on the valuation, they should be able to work out a deal. And usually, in my experience, the only reason they're not is because they disagree significantly as to what value is. So that's, the foreclosure action and the bankruptcy action. Those are basically the party's best alternative to a negotiated agreement. You either go bankrupt and be aggressive, or you be more passive and let the lender see that this is not so simple.
What about mezzanine debt? How does that play into the current crisis? And what are the risks if that's being considered?
So the mezz lenders have been in a bit of a pickle, because they are now faced with borrowers that are probably deeply underwater. Because if the first lender came in at 60% and the second lender came in at another 20%, and the values have come down even on a good day, 40% on average, that's, I think, the number today for the few transactions that have been reported. So if it comes down so clearly they're underwater and they're not getting their interest payment. So they've basically been thrust into the position of the debtor. Now, the advantage they have is that generally they're not as levered, because they're investors instead of managers, as the old management team is. And so they've got the ability to sustain an operation if it makes sense long term. Just get into the same problems and same issues and same negotiations that the debtor would have had there been no mezz debt.
So since this this is kind of a risky proposition. What has the lending market's response been to all of these issues that the hotel industry is having?
Well, it's really kind of an to me, I view it as really kind of an acceleration of a recognition that the retail industry, the mall operators, and the lenders to the retail industry have suffered. There's been kind of a slow drip until this last recession of a decline in the retail's outlets and the whole retail industry. Lodging was not affected at all the way retail was, obviously, but I think that that lodging is now going through the same issues that the retail did, and that is people aren't coming, the sales are declining. How are they going to manage this problem in light of all the different risks that are out there? It's complicated, and I think for that reason you're not seeing a lot of bankruptcies. I think the only two hotel bankruptcies I know of that are significant is one that was filed on the Crown Plaza Hotel in Orlando, which was a great property. It was cash flow. You were making tons of money. People were transferring to themselves all kinds of money, according to statements in the court, and there's nothing left. So that entity went in under that cloud, and then there was an involuntary bankruptcy filed in New York, but that was ultimately converted to Chapter 7. So not a lot of activity right now. I think people are really trying to, I think people are being patient. I don't think anybody's stealing money now. So the reason you often go into court is because you're afraid that people are going to mismanage or steal things. And I don't think that's really the problem today.
So what are the legal implications of what's going on here?
I mean, I guess the legal implications are that people need to work out their problems. And they need to do it on the basis of the legal framework that would operate if they couldn't agree. And if they can't agree, then since that's the basis of whether they will agree, the question is, well, what happens to them in each of these proceedings? And in a bankruptcy, which is where my sandbox is, the valuation is central and cash flow is central. And if cash flows can be supported because the hotel is basically cash flowing, and then you have your battle of the experts and take it in front of a judge, and someone's going to make a decision. And if you have a good expert and you have a good team, and you're able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, but prove by preponderance of the evidence that your valuation is better than the opposing valuation, then there's a great opportunity for parties that are willing to take the risk and go through that. And there's a lot of nuances that go with that, because you can say, well, the lender is undersecured, but that just means it has a big deficiency claim. So what's the benefit of filing? So the answer to that is twofold. First, I just want to give a caveat that the reason why you haven't seen really any hotel bankruptcies of any significance at all in the past decade is because of the bad boy guarantees that every lender gets in connection with hotel development. So borrowers who have generally some net worth and all kinds of instruments set up to protect their assets don't really want to, you know, go through the fishbowl of a court hearing to have their guarantee called on. So that, I think, has been a major reason why there's been no bankruptcy filing. But once you're in, then the question is, how do you deal with a lender and an undersecured lender? And so at that point, my general recommendation to owners is, look, you can't control everything, particularly when you're in court. So you have to take your best shot based on your best evidence. And ultimately, there's the legal backdrop is that you can't own this company without a competitive auction. If you want, as an equity holder, to retain your equity in the face of a deficiency claim that swamps any amount you're willing to pay, then you need to deal with it through an auction. You need to show that the capital contribution you're offering to make for that equity is worth it. And how do you know that it's worth it? Having an expert stand up on the stand and say, oh, yes, the equity is only worth $3 million in my esteemed opinion. Judges don't really care. They prefer to see that you put it up, you've marketed it, you've gone through and shown a fair process of valuation on a current basis. Okay, so that's the way the law has developed, and it's worked. But now you're in this weird environment where there aren't really buyers. So it takes you back to 08, 09, and 10, where there really weren't a lot of buyers. And so, you know, the government would step in and buy GM or Chrysler and et cetera. So that type of environment is helpful to a decently capitalized equity owner that's willing to take the risk of putting the equity up for auction. They wipe out their claim, then they wipe out their equity because they're not willing to pay what some buyer comes forth with, or maybe even that the bank bids in. But there is that equilibrium level that still can be reached on a deal-by-deal basis.
I would also imagine that relationships play a big part in this, and I would just like your take on whether or not because everyone in the hotel industry knows everyone else, does that affect the way these are approached, in your opinion, or that you've seen, or is that something you can't really comment on?
Well, for sure, relationships are critical because it injects, hopefully, a level of trust, or at least a known level of distrust of the players. And so you know what you're dealing with, and that takes one element out of the equation. But look, professionals represent their clients. So I may get along with a lawyer on the other side, but he's got to do what the client tells him to do unless it's criminal. So that relationship helps in terms of there's certainly a level of trust in terms of so many things that can go wrong in a litigation or a bankruptcy environment. Because remember, bankruptcy is just a forum. That's all it is. Bankruptcy lawyers dabble in all kinds of fields. You look at the big law firms, you know, they're in every industry. It's not that the lawyers have a particular expertise in every industry. It's that bankruptcy is a forum to resolve disputes and to protect the assets instead of allowing, you know, all of the vultures to devour the carcass and leave nothing for anybody. So anyway, that's where we are on that.
Right. So what can hoteliers do to prepare for the future during this crisis, and who and what should they be leaning on to get through it?
In my opinion, immediately hire qualified insolvency professionals, experts, who can tell you what the legal framework is and how your facts fit within that legal framework. That's critical. And that should be done immediately because, again, you need to know what your value is, and you need to know, based on that value, where can you go with it? What does it mean in terms of your ability to maneuver? And ultimately, who's going to cover the cost, the negative cash flow for the next year, several months, whatever? And ultimately, how are you going to stabilize your property and stabilize your operations so that you're not waiting for the letter, the default notice, the bankruptcy, the receivership filing, and things like that. You got to hire professionals that are immediately and proactively on top of this. And it's not that expensive. It's not like, I mean, it depends who you go to, but it does not have to be an expensive process. But it's like, you know, you don't have to go in for a major operation on the first day, but you need to have somebody that's at least checking your temperature and your blood pressure and your blood work.
Do you see this crisis having any long-term effect on the bankruptcy market and the hotel industry's relationship to that?
Well, we're going to see law. There's no question we'll start to see some law. But the law, it's not like the law of the hotel. I think Judge Easterbrook wrote an article called The Law of the Horse, where he basically concluded there is no such thing as a law of the horse, but there are many, many different areas of law that apply to a horse. whether it's veterinary or whether it's ownership or whether it's racing or usage or zoning, you know, but there's no law of the horse. And same here, there's no law of the hotel. There's bankruptcy law. There's creditor debtor to rights. There's the cost of equity and the time to pursue equity. And then there's the cost, the administrative cost of dealing with this process. And of course, there's all the details associated with running a hotel, just like managing a horse. So all of which have legal implications, whether from a labor perspective or a governmental perspective or anything else. So that's the way I look at this. And you need a counsel that and because this is what happens in bankruptcy, it's just a forum where all these issues get decided, not where the law of the horse gets decided, but how you deal with a horse from all the different perspectives.
And my last question for you is just what general trends are you seeing right now in the bankruptcy market? And what should hoteliers be aware of?
So the bankruptcy market is really much more at the senior level in the sense that you've got public entity, a very large cap company who's dealing with multiple lenders out there, and they're able often to work out a deal and send this through bankruptcy in, you know, as little as 24 hours or within a month, or do a sale process that takes 60 to 90 days, or, you know, and so you get bankruptcy used as really to resolve short-term dislocations in value. So either there's a consensual restructuring or everybody agrees there's going to be a sale to the highest bidder or a stalking horse bidder, and, you know, the chips fall where they may, and priorities govern. And maybe there's some litigation that can be preserved for the benefit of the unsecured creditors. But that's pretty much it. There has not been a wave of bankruptcy filings, and who knows what we're going to say. I'm hoping that we see a vaccine soon, and, you know, but are we going to go back to where we were? No, but, and clearly there's going to be problems and there's going to be opportunities, but I don't think you're going to see a wave of bankruptcies. So it's really too early to predict what's going to happen. It really depends on the relationship with the parties. And I think because everyone realizes that going into bankruptcy, all it does is stop actions from happening through the automatic stay, but you still have, the problems haven't gone away. They're still there, and buyers aren't out there. And so unless the owner is willing to put capital in to save the project and satisfy the bankruptcy court's requirement and the Congress's requirement that a reorganization be feasible, then this is going to be liquidation and a sale, and the transaction price discovery you're going to see is in court. And I think for a lot of reasons, people want to avoid that decision, those decisions. But you'll see them, and they'll start coming through. But these are generally sophisticated parties who don't want to waste money in court for no reason, and often it's personal. But for reasonable, disinterested parties that are fairly and equitably looking at their rights, they should be able to come together and cut a deal without turning everything into a big circus.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for making time and for sharing your expertise.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Good luck to you.
Awesome. Thanks. Stay safe. Thank you for listening to Lodging on Demand. If you want more content like this, please subscribe to our channel. Or you can listen to Lodging on Demand as a podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.